We're discussing the state of Wisconsin's gray wolf population and the upcoming fall hunt here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Farmers and some residents in the northern part of our state have stressed that wolves kill pets and livestock, and hunting is a means to control them. Conservationists say that the population is still too small, and there isn't reliable data on the actual number of wolves in our state. Did you participate in February's hunt? Are you in the lottery for the fall harvest? What is your take on the issue? Join in 800-642-1234. Danny Kading is a WPR reporter based in Superior and is with us for about 11 more minutes. Danny, can you hear me now?
Yeah, I can hear you, Kate. Can you hear me okay?
We're still having some difficulties here on the air with that background noise. So I think, Danny, what we're going to have to do is call you on your phone line. But let's take a call now. Bob is joining us from Appleton. Hi, Bob. What can you say about wolf hunting?
I just listened to public radio for multiple years. You do such a great job. And I'm very disappointed this morning, by the way, you painted the picture of the title that it's hunters against conservationists. Without the hunting community in the state of Wisconsin and throughout the United States, we would not have all the nonprofit organizations that build the habitat, protect our water, our wetlands that are basically non-existent, our grasslands that are non-existent, that provide all the habitat for pheasants, turkey, deer, and everything else. The reason we're conservationists as hunters is because we haven't been able to build an elk population in the state of Wisconsin for well over 20 years. So we had to bring more elk into the state of Wisconsin recently that you've covered, and to put more calves on the ground to give a better chance to survive the wolves and bears that are harvesting them as predators. Mm. I mean, the animals are not living in Yellowstone National Park in harmony and peace like most people believe. They eat each other. That's a God-given fact. Go to any YouTube channel, you'll see a pack of wolves dismembering a calf.
So, Bob, I just want to stop you there and ask, are you a wolf hunter? Did you get a permit?
Dan, I am. As a hunter, we are conservationists. I'm glad that we have grizzly bears on the land. I'm glad we have wolves in the state of Wisconsin. But instead of painting a picture of the far left and the far right, let's cover the 85% of the people in the middle that have some common sense.
Bob, thank you. And I want Danny here to respond that, you know, Bob's saying hunters are being painted in a really bad light, and this has become a really dug-in political issue, Danny.
Well, I think everyone would agree that it's a really political issue now, and there's a lot of emotions on both sides regarding how this population should be managed. And, you know, hunters feel very strongly that they should be, or that they have rights to manage this population, to hunt wolves. You know, there is a state law that mandates a wolf hunt in Wisconsin. And, you know, on the other side, animal protection groups, wildlife advocacy groups, tribes, you know, they all have concerns about how the state is going about managing the wolf population. And there's just a lot of disagreement over what's the right approach about how we should be managing the population and how the wolf hunt plays into that.
And a number of animal rights groups are suing the DNR to stop the wolf hunt. Can you tell us about this latest suit in Dane County Circuit Court?
Yeah, so this suit was filed by groups like Animal Wellness Action, Friends of the Wisconsin Wolf and Wildlife, and Project Coyote, and they want to overturn that state law that requires a wolf hunting season when the animal isn't listed as a federal endangered species. They want a judge to reverse that 300 wolf quota that was recently set by the Natural Resources Board for the upcoming November hunt, and they want to prevent the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources from issuing license for the fall wolf season. And they're basically arguing that the state's law mandating wolf hunts, it conflicts with the public trust doctrine in their mind, and they think it's unconstitutional. And they say that it strips the DNR of their ability to manage the population based on science.
Is there any history of this type of litigation?
Well, we've seen a lot of litigation related to wolves
sure.
in this last year, in particular. You know, there was also a lawsuit filed earlier this year when the animal was delisted by wildlife and environmental groups. There's a separate lawsuit that was brought by Wisconsin Attorney General Josh Call against the Natural Resources Board, Fred Prain, who has come under fire for his tenure on the board. You know, he's seated on the board past the expiration of his term. So there's a lot of lawsuits that are ongoing right now related to the wolf population.
Let's bring in another call now. Patrick joining us from Rice Lake. Hi, Patrick. What is on your mind? What's your perspective?
Hi, thanks. Thanks for taking my call. I have a little different take on this from your prior caller. I'm a hunter, and I consider myself a conservationist. I do not believe that every hunter is a conservationist. I believe that what occurred in February of 2021 was frankly unbridled killing. This was set in place by Hunter Nation, not good scientific information or data, and that's my feeling about it. Many hunters are conservationists. That's clear through our history in the United States, but not every hunter is. And with the last name that I carry as Wolf, I guess I have more of an affinity to those animals that are part of our landscape.
Patrick, thank you so much. Danny, you know, Patrick brings up Hunter Nation. Can you explain, you know, what is happening there?
Yeah, so Kansas-based Hunter Nation obviously brought the lawsuit in February to force a wolf hunt during the winter season, because there was a lot of fear that with the wolf delisted and the Biden administration coming in, that they would potentially restore protections for the wolf and there would not be another opportunity to hunt wolves this fall. A Jefferson County judge ended up ruling in favor of Hunter Nation, ordered the DNR to immediately hold a hunt, and they did. And unfortunately, what we saw in February was that, you know, 218 wolves were killed in less than 72 hours, going way past the state licensed hunter quota of 119 wolves. But there's a lot of debate over that from hunters. You know, they say that, you know, they only went over the quota by a little bit, but that's something, you know, because they see that the overall quota was 200 wolves. But that conflicts with the arrangement between the state and tribes over, you know, who gets how many animals regarding the hunt, because tribes have rights to manage the population as well under their federal treaty rights. And so there's just a lot of strong feelings over how that hunt took place. And, you know, there's been a lot of disagreement over, you know, just exactly how many wolves were over harvested.
We're talking with Danielle Kading, WPR reporter in Superior, talking about the wolf hunt quota, the litigation, the contentious questions around how to best manage our state's wolf population. With your insights, perspective as well, 800-642-1234. Danny, you mentioned the tribal nations and licensed hunters. They split the quota with the state's Ojibwe tribes. What are tribal leaders saying about this fall hunt?
Well, the tribes say that the Natural Resources Board clearly doesn't care about managing the population based on science. They say there's a lack of respect for tribes. You know, they've argued that if tribal hunters went over the quota like state licensed hunters did, that there would be an uproar and they'd be accused of harming the population. So they feel that the Natural Resources Board and the Department of Natural Resources are incapable of sound management of the population. And they've pointed to the February hunt as evidence of that. And they've asked the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service to restore protections for the wolf, but it doesn't look like that's going to be happening. The Biden administration appears to be backing the Trump administration's decision to delist the wolf for now.
The chairman of the Lac des Flambeaux Ojibwe Nation, John Johnson, told the Green Bay Press Gazette recently that wolves have a right to survive, that we're intruding on their territory, not the other way around. And in Johnson's words, I hear this disconnect between the values of tribal nations and the Wisconsin DNR. Can you kind of help us acknowledge the bond of gray wolves and how they play an important role in Ojibwe culture?
Yeah, well, you know, Ojibwe tribes in Wisconsin view the wolf or Myangan as a brother. You know, so for them, harvesting the wolf is just not even an option. It's unacceptable. And so, you know, as John Johnson said, you know, they hold a lot of value and they want to protect the wolf population in Wisconsin. You know, hunting of wolves is not allowed on reservations. And, you know, they've been looking at things like buffer zones to try and protect wolves in their areas to prevent any hunting around their reservations.
Let's go to Becky now in Beloit. Hi, Becky.
Hi. Well, two things. I live in Beloit, and I've never seen a town this far south.
Oh, Becky, you're breaking up a bit. I think you've said you have never seen a wolf this far south in Wisconsin. Is that right? I think
she's for baiting.
Okay, Becky, yeah, you're fading in and out here. But I think the question from Becky, Danny, is that Becky hasn't seen a wolf in her area and is a question around baiting. Becky asks, is baiting legal?
Oh, okay. Well, I'm not sure I can answer her question, but, you know, as far as the population goes and where we're seeing wolves and not seeing them, mm-hmm. you know, the wolf population has grown from just 25 wolves in 1980 to, I think, the last population estimate, pre-hunt population estimate from the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources was somewhere around 1,100 wolves, and there could be as many as 1,400 wolves in Wisconsin, according to their estimates. And generally, you know, wolf range is more focused up north and in the central part of the state and, you know, around areas that are highly populated. We see fewer wolves, but, you know, their range has grown over the years, and that has caused at times increasing conflicts with the wolf.
There's also been conflicts and controversy over the estimates of the population, how large the population is. How reliable is the data?
Well, I think that the DNR biologists and wildlife managers would argue that they're using sound models to come up with their data. But there has been a lot of debate over the models that they're using to rely on forming these population estimates. You know, one thing that hunters have argued is that the DNR is not capturing an accurate picture of the wolf population. You know, some hunters I've spoken with have said that, you know, we're looking on public lands mostly and not private lands. And, you know, are we getting a good picture of the number of wolves that are located on private property? So, yeah, there is some debate over the modeling that's used, but I think that these models that the DNR are relying on have been widely used elsewhere.
Let's bring in Lisa now in Toma. Lisa, hi.
Yes, I am a hunter. I mean, I hunt deer, but I disagree strongly with the wolf hunt. I think one of the things we can do as conservationists is to get the tags for the wolves and then not use them. I think that would take care of the problem because they're breaking up family units. I mean, these are not lone animals.
So Lisa's saying that this hunt disrupts those family units, Danny.
Well, we are seeing disruption of packs and also pup reproduction pup production as a result of the February hunt. You know, there's been concern that as many as, I think, 100 wolf packs lost pups as a result from the February hunt. You know, there have been studies that have come out that said hunters and poachers may have killed a third of Wisconsin's wolf population. So, I'm sorry, I forgot the question again, Kate.
No, that's okay. And we only have a few seconds here as we wrap up. I'm just wondering what you're watching for out of the policy setting board for the DNR, because that too has been a real political hotbed.
Well, the Natural Resources Board has a meeting coming up this month, and I believe they're going to be discussing some proposed changes to hunting regulations. You know, the DNR has suggested possibly ending night hunting of wolves and shortening the registration window after harvesting wolves and issuing zone-specific tags. You know, issuing zone-specific tags wouldn't happen for the fall hunt, but it's possible that the board could approve could end night hunting of wolves and shorten that registration window. So those are potential changes that might be coming up at the next board meeting, but that depends on what the board decides.
Danny, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much, Kate.
Danielle Kading is a Wisconsin Public Radio based in Superior. Coming up, we continue our series on immigration and learn about new support systems set up to serve undocumented students. Are you a DACA recipient in college this fall? What are the struggles and challenges? 800-642-1234. News update is next on the Ideas Network. We're discussing campus resources for DACA recipients as part of our conversations all this week on immigration. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Thanks for being here. In 2012, President Obama issued an executive order to create the DACA program, Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, protecting DREAMers, as they're known, undocumented youth from deportation and allowing them access to education and employment. A Center for DREAMers is opening at UW-Madison with the help of a Wisconsin IDEA grant. Are you a DACA applicant? What is the status of your application? Do you work with undocumented students? What are the greatest challenges? It's 800-642-1234. Christabel Martinez is CEO of the advocacy organization called DREAMers of Wisconsin. Christabel, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Good morning. We also have Erica Rosales with us, the new director of the Center for DREAMers at UW-Madison. Erica, welcome to you.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me as well.
Yeah, Erica, let's start with you. About 2% of students enrolled in colleges and universities across the country are undocumented. That is from the President's Alliance on Higher Education and Immigration. So give us an overview, if you will. What does the undocumented student population look like?
Well, it kind of splits into two populations. So one would be DACA recipients, which are still considered, and I'm actually one of them, are still considered undocumented, but have, as you all mentioned, some actual access to certain things. So with DACA, you can have access to a driver's license, a social security number, a work permit, and can apply for advanced parole to travel outside of the country under certain circumstances. And therefore, you're able to apply for to go to college because you have a social security number and you also have a driver's license. And then you have folks who are fully undocumented, which means they do not have any of these they don't have access to any of these things. So and within that population, I think it's a little bit trickier just because the barriers for undocumented folks are very high, even if you have DACA, but they become higher if you are fully undocumented.
Erica, would you be willing to share your story as a DREAMer?
Sure.
When did you come to the U.S.?
I came to the U.S. in 1995. I was 12 years old, and I came fully undocumented, meaning I did not have any sort of status. I did not have a visa or anything, so I literally crossed the border without documents.
And in the subsequent years, what has that been like for you as you move through the legal process?
So there's actually no legal process for DACA recipients. What we have, like as you mentioned, what we have now is just you have access to certain things, but it does not allow you to have status. Those of us who have DACA are very grateful for it, but it's also it's a huge uncertainty. So over the past 9 years, we've been through a very tumultuous roller coaster that because of the previous administration, DACA was stopped, and with this one as well. And so it means that some folks are not able to apply or renew. Right now, new folks are not able to apply to the DACA program. So those who are already in the program can reapply like myself. But new folks who are actually eligible cannot apply. And so it's been very uncertain. It's, 9 years. It's a long while. A lot of people call us youth. And, you know, I'm going to be turning 39 next month. So some of us are not that young anymore. And so it creates a lot of uncertainty. Even though we meet certain requirements that are very high, you know, we're not even, if I have a traffic violation, that could definitely harm my renewal process with something as small as a traffic violation. So it's always very uncertain. It's always very high stress. And with the addition that a lot of us come from mixed status families, meaning that our families could have legal status, so they could be residents or citizens. And we have family members who are also completely undocumented, which creates a lot of weight, I should say. Yeah.
Always on your mind. Yeah, always on your mind.
Completely.
Mm-hmm. Christabel, let's turn to you. How does the status of being undocumented in college, at university, how does that limit educational opportunities?
For sure. Well, the barriers of financial resources, being able to apply to scholarships, financial aid. So the cost of education is a lot higher because students get out-of-state rates in addition to cost of living, books and supplies, and any other like miscellaneous funds. In addition to like the lack of resources, there are not a lot of, I would say, people on campus or like administration necessarily know where to direct students to resources, and that can provide a mental toll on students as well in terms of mental health resources and who they are able to trust on campus as well when it comes to being open about their status.
Do you have any sense, Christabel, of the likelihood or the risk of undocumented students dropping out of college, not making it to graduation?
Yeah, definitely. Like, again, like the lack of mental health or that'll have a toll on your mental health, and also the lack of financial resources and scholarships will definitely be a barrier and a reason why a lot of students might not be able to complete their education.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Christabel Martinez, who is CEO of the group Dreamers of Wisconsin. Erica Rosales is with us as well, directs the new Center for Dreamers at UW-Madison. It's a resource hub housed within the UW Law School. Are you a DACA applicant? What is the status? Have you been affected by the pandemic in the last year? What kind of immigration reforms are you looking at for from the Biden administration? 800-642-1234 to join in. Erica, in June, you received a 2-year grant from the Baldwin, Wisconsin Idea Endowment to create the Center for Dreamers at the UW. What will this enable you to do?
So, yeah, thank you for that question. Myself, alongside with Aaron Barbado, who is an immigration attorney and a professor at UW-Madison, we were able to get this grant. Essentially, it's going to be a seed grant because it is for 2 years, and it also it pays for 50% of my time. And then a student, which actually Christabel is one of our students working with us. Mm. And so with this, we're hoping to have the center be a resource hub where we have different branches. One of them is going to be social work, so working with DACA recipients who are either attending college in Wisconsin or want to attend college that need social work resources as well as mental health. Then we have the legal branch, which hopefully we can have clinics, events, and then also have access to free legal assistance for DACA recipients or undocumented recipients or undocumented folks within that same group that are either wanting to attend college or are attending college in Wisconsin. And then the other two will be education and career services. So just helping students navigate the very complex university system, as well as providing some training for educators and administrators within the system. So as Christabel mentioned, there's a lot of misinformation and there's also lack of information. And so sometimes undocumented folks or DACA recipients unfortunately don't have that information on hand. And then also on the other end, administrators often don't have that information properly as well. And we want to make sure that everybody's equipped to help students who are DACA recipients or undocumented the best way possible.
Yeah, that's a lot of outreach there, a lot of resources in one place. What is the timeline or the status of these services?
Oh, my goodness. So it's a huge undertaking. We're in the strategic planning process right now. We want to be really mindful of how we create this and not recreate anything. And also we want to build community partnerships. So if there are already any services that are already created, such as the ones that Dreamers of Wisconsin have created, we can redirect folks to those community services, and then we can see where the gaps are. So then we can create those, or we could create them in partnership. Christabel and I have been working pretty closely with this so that we don't recreate anything, so that, you know, we can
being as efficient as possible. Christabel, you know, you transformed the student organization at UW-Madison into a statewide organization advocating, providing resources for undocumented students. How does Dreamers of Wisconsin connect students to resources, and how do you plan to work in partnership with Center for Dreamers?
Yeah, so I can talk a little bit about like the work that we've actually been doing. A lot of our work is focused on providing events and fundraising opportunities to provide scholarships for undocumented youth or undocumented students pursuing higher education in Wisconsin. Another resource that we would also be providing along with the Center for Dreamers is our newly launched Writing Center. So it's basically a center where undocumented youth are able to submit their college essays and be reviewed by writing fellows. And then this upcoming November, we're actually launching our first pilot program for undocumented immigrant students in Dane County, where it'll be led and facilitated by Lalo Mancia, who himself was undocumented as well, and will be able to provide modules for students in high school on how to apply to college as an undocumented, documented students and the resources that are available.
When you talk with high school students who are undocumented or come from a mixed status family, what are their aspirations about college, or what are they thinking about college?
I mean, just to go, you know, be able to receive an education and then be able to work in the workforce like anyone else, and just whether that is becoming a doctor, a lawyer, or any other career paths that they want, they have the same aspirations that anyone else would have as well.
Christabel Martinez leads the advocacy organization Dreamers of Wisconsin. The UW's Erica Rosales launching the Center for Dreamers, a resource hub in the works now with the Immigrant Justice Clinic at the UW Law School. What policies do you want the Biden administration to focus on with Pathways to Citizenship? What is your story on coming to the U.S. as a child? How long have you been here? What obstacles are before you as you work toward a college degree? Join in any point, 800-642-1234. Back in a minute on the Ideas Network. We're hearing experiences of undocumented students and support systems that are being created to help them here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Roughly 11 million undocumented immigrants live in limbo in the U.S., and according to the American Immigration Council, Wisconsin is home to thousands of DACA recipients, the program protecting undocumented immigrants who came to the U.S. as children. What questions do you have about DACA's legal history, or what's at stake for college students? Still time to talk, 800-642-1234. We have Christabel Martinez, CEO of the group Dreamers of Wisconsin, and Erica Rosales, who leads the newly created Center for Dreamers at UW-Madison. Erica, I want to pose a similar question to you about the risk of undocumented students not making it all the way through college and achieving that degree. Do you see undocumented students dropping out because of whether financial resources or other things that are in the way from achieving that college degree?
Yes, certainly. I have been on that road, unfortunately, both as undocumented, as an undocumented person for my undergraduate, and then for my graduate degree, I had DACA. And in both cases, it has been extremely difficult. And there's a lot of misinformation. And oftentimes, there's certain specific programs, especially once you get to the graduate level, that have additional requirements. And oftentimes, folks don't have the information correctly, so they might think that students are actually not eligible to apply for the program because of the certain requirements. We've seen this at UW-Madison and other universities where students are given such information and end up dropping out because of that. Also, we have had students who have had DACA or currently have DACA are getting their PhD and are doing work with their PhD program. And because of the current backlogs, meaning that the renewal process for DACA or anything in regards to immigration is taking a really, really long time. So folks who are already in the DACA program, their renewal process is taking longer than expected, and therefore sometimes their expiration date comes up, and they have to leave their program or their job, even though they're already in the DACA program and they're already eligible to renew. So it gets extremely complicated, and all of these complications, whether it's mental health, financial, or all of these legal aspects, make it really difficult, and sometimes folks do end up dropping out because of those reasons.
Yeah, and you hear students at the highest echelon of study working on a doctorate, a PhD, and a government renewal process for DACA could shatter their dreams.
Exactly.
And yeah. So, Christabel, I'm wondering from you, as you look on Capitol Hill at the White House, what opportunities would clear a pathway to citizenship? What do you want to see out of the Biden administration?
In an ideal world, definitely, if we could see in-state tuition policies being initiated across the country so students aren't restricted on whether they're able to pursue a higher education, because some states do restrict students from even being able to attend a college or university. And that would, again, provide less of a financial burden for students, but also allowing students to apply for scholarships and financial assistance so that they are able to realize their career aspirations as well. So that's kind of like what I would say I would be advocating for in terms of policy change.
Erica, what would you like to see on the policy front and change with policies at the state or federal government level?
Yeah, I think at the state level, things that Christabel already mentioned, because that is something that could change doesn't necessarily need the federal involvement in it, which would be in-state tuition. And then also driver's licenses for undocumented folks, which was already the case for Wisconsin in the past, both in-state tuition and also driver's licenses for undocumented folks. And then at the federal level, I mean, ideally immigration reform. And if not, then there is a current reconciliation package that might pass, hopefully, that would allow a pathway to citizenship for DACA recipients, as well as other immigration populations, such as temporary protected status folks. And so this would allow for citizenship, which, again, ideally, there's 11 million folks who are undocumented who are providing their part of the economy, they're part of society in the United States. So that would be the ideal dream, I think, for most of us who are immigrants.
Erica, I want to circle back to your Center for Dreamers at the UW. And I'm wondering, have you been able to see any templates out there at other universities or any roadmaps for these resource hubs for undocumented students? Are other universities creating these centers?
Actually, yeah, there are. I've been quite surprised and pleased that there are other universities that have resource hubs and centers. There's actually a template. So Berkeley has a template. Unfortunately, the template for them includes institution and includes a lot of things that California as a state is able to provide students, and that's something that we do not have. So there's a lot of things that we cannot apply to our center in Wisconsin, whether it's with Berkeley or other universities, because a lot of them already receive a lot of state support and then also university support. A lot of these centers have been institutionalized, meaning that they're part of the university, and it's not based on a grant. In our case, it's based on a grant that, you know, it would end in 2 years, and hopefully we get additional funding, and also hopefully we do become institutionalized, hopefully we do get institution, which would lessen the barriers. I think it's barriers that we're trying to navigate for students and barriers that we're trying to navigate as a center.
Christabel, what do you see the future holding for your Center for Dreamers that you've seen grown now into a state organization?
I'm sorry, you said, what do I see for the future?
Yeah.
In terms of Dreamers of Wisconsin?
Dreamers of Wisconsin, yes. Sorry, I just flipped the organizations, yes.
No, it's okay. Well, hopefully also getting additional funding to be able to mitigate the financial barriers that undocumented students face. This year, we've been able to, even during COVID, we're able to raise around $20,000 to be able to provide in scholarships for next year, continuing to grow our events, and then also getting the word out about Dreamers of Wisconsin and our website and the resources that we're trying to compile for students, as well as our educational program, our first pilot program that's going to be in November, seeing that grow and seeing how we can improve that program as well after the first year, and just again be a resource just for all DACA undocumented students in Wisconsin.
Well, Christabel and Erica, thank you both for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Yes, thank you.
Christabel Martinez, CEO of Dreamers of Wisconsin, Erica Rosales, director of the new Center for Dreamers at UW-Madison. And tomorrow we wrap up our series on immigration. Hope you can join us with a historical look and how the past informs how laws get made as we wrestle with being a nation of immigrants. And just ahead, we look at the status of Wisconsin's museum exhibitions and how museums are holding up around the state. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. It's The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.